America's ready to get back to work, but to win in the new economy, you need every advantage to succeed. Smart companies run on NetSuite by Oracle, the world's number one cloud business system. With NetSuite, you'll have visibility and control over your financials, HR, inventory, e-commerce, and more. Everything you need, all in one place. Whether you're doing a million or hundreds of millions in sales, NetSuite lets you manage every penny with precision. You'll have the agility to compete with anyone, work from anywhere, and run your whole company right from your phone. Join over 20,000 companies who trust NetSuite to make it happen. NetSuite surveyed hundreds of business leaders and assembled a playbook of the top strategies they're using as America reopens for business. Receive your free guide, 7 actions businesses need to take now, and schedule your free product tour at netsuite.com/Golic. Get your free guide and schedule your free product tour right now at netsuite.com/Golic. That's netsuite.com/Golic.
Glad you're with us. Golic and Wingo on a Monday morning. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. Our phone guest will join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Mike Golic, Mike Golic Jr., Trey Wingo here. Coming up in just a few minutes, we'll talk to our NFL reporter, Ed Werder, about the latest situation with the Dallas Cowboys and Dak Prescott expecting to, according to Adam Schefter, sign his franchise tag today, which gives them less than a month to try and figure out a long-term deal, or Dak's going into the 2020 season with $31 million on the salary.
Wow. Whew. So nice to know. You know you're going to make, you're going to at least make that.
And I understand the comfort and security that comes with a long-term deal, especially in that league and especially that position. Everyone wants to feel valued, but at the very least, relative to what Dak had made up until this point in his career, again, being a guy that wasn't a first-round draft pick, wasn't a second-round draft pick, wasn't anything like that, all the way in the fourth round, what a come up and pay on that alone.
Wow.
Combined with, and this is one of the things I'd be interested to hear from Ed, the advantages that come with being able to do all this. Yeah. Jerry said a while ago, the advantages of being a Cowboys quarterback is you get all these fine endorsement deals that come with it. Yeah, so he's got as the backdrop, so he can risk it a little more in all this, knowing he is a made man.
Yep, and we'll also talk to Bill Laimbeer, head coach of the Las Vegas Aces and the president of basketball operations and head coach in the WNBA, as they get set for their own bubble environment going a little bit later month, also in Florida.
In Bradenton, Florida, at the IMG Academy.
Yep.
The 22-game schedule.
So we're dealing with, we'll look forward to talking to both of those people today, but we're also waiting to see what happens today at Talladega, because if you haven't heard, NASCAR revealed late last night that a noose was found in Bubba Wallace's garage Sunday at the race at Talladega. The race was washed out. They're going to rerun it again today. And obviously, we all know what that noose signifies. He's the only African-American driver on the NASCAR circuit. It was a sickening display of evil and racism. And Bubba tweeted out, you heard in the SportsCenter rejoin right there at the top of the hour, that this will not stop me, and nor should it. But I'm curious, A, how quickly NASCAR is going to find out who this idiot is, because as we just had Marty Smith on, there is very limited access right now in the pandemic with who can be in there. And he also said that's a brand new garage facility at Talladega, and there are cameras everywhere.
You know, this is a tough thing because, and Mike, you really spoke well about this earlier, from the side of trying to be above what that represents when you want to talk about it, into just how heinous that is. A friggin' noose. I mean, a noose. Everybody knows what that means. That's just not saying our Confederate flag's not allowed in Talladega, I'm going to sneak a flag into Bubba Wallace's locker. This is a noose. Yeah. You know exactly what that represents. It takes a lot for me anyway, and you talked about this earlier, in a sport that we play that is a violent sport. All it does, I mean, we literally try to hit the person harder in front of us and then hit the person, in my case, who has the ball. I hit them so hard that they fall down. That's what I've done most of my life. And you have that mentality. It enrages me that this person violated the space, right?
The sanctity.
Because that's the thought I know from that you brought up. You violated the locker room. And the anger that would pour out from teammates, the person and teammates, is I would want to answer in kind to me. Putting a noose is a violent act to me. You know, and I would want to respond in kind if I ever got a hold of that guy. And you want to try and hold yourself and say, you know what? Now is the time to be above that. Now is the time to, to work past that. But man, there's just times when you're like, you go, is it? You know, I mean, I can't imagine how mad those drivers have to be, that their area was violated like that in that way against one of their brethren.
Yeah. And I guess that's just my way of saying, like, make it that personal. If it wasn't already, so much of this has been, and the last few months have been interesting, because even as I heard back my own statements from earlier, I'm going, man, you needed this to crystallize that racism was a real thing. But we've watched a lot of people kind of have aha moments that maybe haven't been exposed to as much of this, or haven't had conversations with their black and brown friends about these things before and have been awakened to this. And so maybe everyone's coming to this in a different process, and maybe that something this jarring is what you need to really rattle at home. But it even sounds insane for me to listen back to and go, that you needed that. But I'm always trying to find a way, because it's all of our responsibility in this. Marty Smith has come out and been so passionate on this and said, there are so many good people in NASCAR. This isn't who we are. But I saw Bomani Jones point this out on Twitter, and I think it's worth mentioning that we talked about the Confederate flag that they did away with in 2020. In 2020. Like, this isn't who we are, but this ugly side of things, the racism that has a history in the sport, has had a seat at the table, as I heard someone put it, for a while in this. And so it's everyone's job. It's all of our jobs who are saying, this does not represent me. This does not represent the sport that I love, to call it out and cast it out. Like, that's what makes it so important from the group setting, is if you are one of the people involved in this, if you are one of the white people involved in this who are saying, this doesn't represent what I feel or what this sport should be, then it's on everyone to prove it right now, to point this out, to cast it out and carve it out. And you've been given a very easy example. Like, this is not a difficult thing to condemn. This is a very easy thing to condemn. Yeah. And so NASCAR needs to take that opportunity, and everyone involved, I hope, would respond with the anger of, again, like Dad pointed out, one of my teammates has been attacked, because that's what this is. That should anger anybody.
That's why I think what happens today before the race is going to be as significant as anything else that NASCAR has done, because we were supposed to run it yesterday, got washed out, we found out about it, everyone knows about it. Well, guess what? When everybody's on the track today at 3 o'clock, you have a golden opportunity to make a strongest statement as you possibly can, to say, we're not doing this, we're not putting up with this, and you need to understand that all of us feel this way. Every single one of us.
I'm going to be honest, Trey, I don't know how they do that, and I don't know what I expect from them in that regard.
I don't.
It's not like it was when it was the Confederate flag, when it was not only the removal of the flag, but it was this showcase of, we stand with this symbol of hope and unity and advancing the conversation, like Bubba Wallace. A public condemnation before the start of a race, I don't know how you execute that in a way that to me feels genuinely realistic.
Because I'm kind of with you, Trey. I wonder what's going to happen, but then I think, well, what can happen? The statement they already put out was very straightforward and very damning. So I'm not really sure what the show will be today, or what can be done.
You're right. The statement was good. I think there, as much as that noose is a visceral visual image of something, we all know what it means. There's an opportunity to have a visceral visual image today at the start of the race.
I think that image is that Bubba Wallace goes out there and races.
Yeah.
Like Bubba Wallace said in his statement.
Right. No.
He said, I will not be deterred. I will not be stopped. The image of him going out there in the face of this and continuing to do his job undeterred, to me, is the most powerful thing that happens coming out of
this. You are 100% correct there. But what have we always said? It should not be up to Bubba. It should be up to everybody else to say, we're about it. We're in this with you. And I think if we're talking about that fraternity, that inside the locker room mentality, all the other, we've already seen some of the other drivers tweet about it. There is a golden opportunity in some way, shape, or form for all of them to say, this is one of our guys, and we are with him today.
And to that end, I think it comes from the drivers and not
from
NASCAR.
That's what I just said, the drivers, So I think there's a golden opportunity.
So we'll see what they do. Again, the race, 3 o'clock today, because the race itself did get rained out yesterday. So but you know they're going to find the person. Again, we had Marty Smith on earlier. It's a new garage, and you have to believe the implementation of cameras had to be there and surveillance. So, and this was off limits to so many people now because of COVID, that it almost feels ridiculously easy. At least we say that, we hope that, to find out who did this.
Yeah. Ryan McGee was on the SB Post show and basically said, they're going to find this guy.
That was a very, very isolated incident, because of the pandemic. there's an extremely limited number of people allowed in that garage. It's just essential personnel. It's people that work on race teams. It's track security and track employees, and that's really kind of it. There's no fans. There's no hot passes. None of that stuff. There's go tours in the garage like they normally are. And so NASCAR is smoking this guy out, this man or whoever it is, and that's what's happening here because they could have sat on this thing. There were only a couple of people that knew about it. Bubba Wallace didn't know about it until he was told about it. And so what's happening is that they're sending a message, and they're starting the process of whoever it was, they're letting them know they can't hide, and they're closing the ranks on this person.
And then there's the legal side of it. And every state has different rules. Do you consider it a hate crime? Where does that go from the law? This is in Alabama. So we'll have to see from that side of it and who the person is. If it evolved in a team, as NASCAR said, they'll never work in NASCAR again. So a few layers to go with this because, I mean, we've been talking about a lot of different things. And you know, the Confederate flag. There are those that want to fly that we saw it flying yesterday outside that still will want to fly it and talk about their heritage. They want, they'll have that discussion for whatever you want to think about it. Even with the t-shirt that Dabble wore, the OAN t-shirt, people have discussion.
That Mike Gundy.
That Mike Gundy. I do not want to make that mistake. That Mike Gundy wore, that people will have the discussion about that network. There's no discussion here, right? I mean, there's none. None. You leave a noose, you know exactly what the, there is no, well, there's two sides to every story. No, there is not two sides to every story when you put a noose in someone's locker. There is one side only, and the other side needs to come down very hard on that side.
And that's the point I'll continue to make is this is the easy part. What NASCAR's got coming ahead of him because the decision to take, to ban the Confederate flag from NASCAR events was the start. It was the start of the work of carving these kind of things continually. And we've heard from Marty Smith and Ryan McGee, yeah, who have covered this sport for years and have covered this sport for so long and are such great ambassadors for it that NASCAR has come a long way. But as Ryan pointed out, this rattled a lot of people, and he said, you know, it was that last ditch effort by the people that were being pushed out to try and lash out. NASCAR and everyone around it have the difficult work to do of weeding this stuff out as it goes forward in response to that decision made by NASCAR.
And again, we'll see what happens today when the race is scheduled to run, weather permitting, 3 o'clock at Talladega. Meanwhile, we have the start of a contract situation for one Rain Dakota Prescott with the Dallas Cowboys. He is expected to sign that franchise tag offer today, which means at a minimum in the 2020 season, the quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys, Dak Prescott, will be playing for $31.4 million. They still have a little less than a month to try and work out a long-term deal, which, as we all know, would be in the best interest of the Dallas Cowboys, so they are not crushed by a cap hit for Dak Prescott if he's franchise tagged again next year. For more on all of this, we're delighted to be joined by Ed Werder, one of our fine NFL reporters. Ed, what took this long for Dak to sign the deal? Do we know why today is the significant day that he chose to do it?
Well, I think one factor, Trey, is that at some point Dak has to get a playbook and has to immerse himself in the process of learning, you know, the offense that they're going to run under first-year coach Mike McCarthy, even though Kellen Moore is a holdover offensive coordinator, there are going to be some changes. So I think he felt like because of that, there was some urgency to get this resolved so he could be part of that process again. And beyond that, I asked somebody involved a couple of weeks ago, why doesn't Prescott sign the tender and assure himself in these uncertain financial times of the $31.4 million? And the answer I got, which made a lot of sense to me, was the first thing is once you do that, you might eliminate the urgency the team feels to do the long-term contract. They might take the approach that, okay, we got that done for this year, we'll readdress it next year. And his goal remains to get the long-term contract. And I still think that ultimately is how this is resolved. And, you know, so that there's that part of it. And then that's offset by the fact that now they believe because of the potential for there to be lower revenue in the NFL because of the coronavirus pandemic and the fact that if there are any games, they may be played but without any fans, which the NFLPA estimates will cost the league $3 billion and could potentially lower the salary cap, that the Cowboys are going to need to get a deal done now to avoid him counting $37.7 million against a flat or lower cap next year. So I think those are all of the factors that went into his thought process as far as going ahead and signing the tag.
So I guess along those lines, Ed, if Dak doesn't get everything that he wants, why would he agree to a long-term deal if it isn't according to his plan completely, knowing what could happen next year?
Well, I think he's already demonstrated that he's, at least so far, very committed to getting the short-term contract, the four-year contract, rather than the 5 or 6 years the Cowboys have historically offered players on extensions. All of the players they signed last year, including DeMarcus Lawrence as a franchise tag player and Ezekiel Elliott as a holdout, they all got 5 or more years on their contracts, so the Cowboys can amortize that amount over the course of more years and lower the cap impact in those early years. So that's the difference of opinion and philosophy that's led to this impasse. And I think Dak is positioned to win this negotiation still, even though he signs a tender for the reasons I explained, that you can't, for example, if the cap stays where it is now next year at $198 million and Dak is counting $31.4 million this year, well, the next year he's going to count almost $38 million. And Amari Cooper, who just signed, signed a 5-year, $100 million contract, but this year he only counts $12 million. Next year he counts an additional $8 million, $20 million. So then you have him and Dak Prescott, you know, charging $50 million to the cap. Two players taking 25% of your cap. That's just not an effective way to build your roster. And for those reasons, Prescott still believes he can win this negotiation and before July 15th come out of it with a long-term deal.
Talking to Ed with us here on Go Woke and Wingo. Ed, with all of that, it sounds extremely unlikely that if Dak played the cap, played under the tag on this season, that next season, short of gutting the rest of their roster in order to keep him that regard, do you think that if, let's put it this way, if Dak plays this season on the franchise tag, do you believe it is his last season as a Cowboy?
Well, I think if he plays next year on the franchise tag, I think there's no question then, given the risk you've taken to play year to year without any long-term financial security, then you're going to go make the grab for unrestricted free agency in the prime of your career at the quarterback position, which I'm not sure has it been done in the history of the league under this system. So I think he could play, you know, this year under the franchise tag and still look for a long-term deal. But if he plays 2 years under the tag, then I think the Cowboys will have to find another quarterback.
Yeah, and boy, Dak on the open market, you'll find out exactly what he's going to be worth. Because
I think there's a lot of teams that would have paid Dak Prescott an enormous sum of money and would have surpassed what the Cowboys have offered. Even the Cowboys are saying that, hey, we've offered him the chance to be the highest paid player in the league, you know, at least temporarily until Deshaun Watson and Patrick Mahomes, who are eligible for new contracts for the first time in the NFL, sign their deals. But I think there are a handful of teams at least that would have made an effort to sign Dak Prescott to that kind of contract.
There's no question. Ed Werder with it, because we've seen what Dak has been able to do on the field for the Dallas Cowboys already. And then there's a player from the Dallas Cowboys who has yet to be a part of any sort of team activity in terms of practice or training camp or play in a game, and that's newly defensive tackle Gerald McCoy. But he's been very outspoken, saying we haven't heard anything from Jerry Jones about social injustice and everything that's going on in this country. And it's interesting because Gerald McCoy has been very outspoken, and a lot of people, he's not alone, a lot of people have noticed that the silence from Jerry Jones on all the things that are going on in this country in terms of social undress has quite frankly been a little deafening.
Well, and obviously a few years ago when this all started with Colin Kaepernick kneeling, Jerry was one of the most outspoken owners in the NFL, taking the position of issuing ultimatums to his players that, hey, we're going to stand, you know, toe the sideline, stand arm to arm, shoulder to shoulder, and respect the anthem and the flag and all that represents. And if we don't do that, then we won't play, meaning any player who refuses to comply. I can tell you for sure that Michael Bennett did not comply very often last year, if ever, and that was either not noticed or conveniently overlooked because of his importance to the team. But yeah, I think it's interesting that Jerry has decided, as have many other owners, not to speak out about where they stand, and our only conclusion can be that they must have an opinion that's contrary to what's publicly acceptable at this time, or it's not in line with what other people in the NFL are saying. And until he says something that proves otherwise, I think it's fair to assume that that's the case.
But and Ed, we all know all NFL owners are not created equal, right? There are certain people who, first of all, Jerry's never met a microphone he doesn't like. And secondly, he is one of the most influential leaders in the most influential and powerful and financially strong sport in this country. How much longer can he just sort of not say anything, in your opinion?
I guess because of the unique dynamics of this offseason and the fact there is no access to Jerry, that he can go along saying, hey, I don't talk in the offseason except at the draft and training camp and so forth, and we haven't had any of those events yet. And when we do, then you can ask me whatever question you want, and I'll answer it the way I feel like I should. So I think either the start of training camp or when they resolve this DAC contract situation would be the next opportunity for Jerry to speak, unless Jerry just decides arbitrarily to speak on his own to this specific thing, that's when that'll happen. I think the amazing thing here is that Gerald McCoy is a player that the Cowboys just signed. As you said, he hasn't taken a single snap. He hasn't been tried on his uniform yet. And he's calling out the owner of the franchise. And like you said, one of the most powerful people in the NFL. And I think that because of where the Cowboys were roster wise, in terms of their most prominent players in 2016, that Jerry could say the things that he did and make the demands on his players that he did without rebuke. I'm not sure that's the case now. I think Dak Prescott's a different person in the Cowboys organization now than he was 4 years ago. I think Ezekiel Elliott is a different person in the Cowboys hierarchy than he was at the time then, when they remained silent about that and nobody contradicted Jerry from the locker room. Given the movement that's happened across the world and in the country and in the NFL, I see no way that Jerry could say the same things and get away and enforce it with his players, his most prominent players now.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're seeing players everywhere understanding the power and the platform they have. And clearly Gerald McCoy is embracing that as well. Ed, as always, we appreciate the time. Thank you, my friend. Always good to talk to you.
You guys have a great week. Thanks for having me on.
You got it.
Thanks, Ed.
By the way, and Dak Prescott signing that franchise tender is living proof that Dak feels he has all the leverage. Proof is brought to you by Pennzoil. Proof is brought to you by Pennzoil synthetic motor oils. They're made from natural gas. It gives you unbeatable engine protection. The proof is in the Pennzoil, based on Sequence 4A wear test using SAE 5W30.
I did some math.
Yeah?
Oh, boy.
Oh, dear God.
Again, you in the math.
All right, his tender, he signed that if he makes $31.4 million this year, players usually get paid every week, so it's over 17 weeks, 17-week season. Take a guess.
18-something.
$1.847 million per.
I just saw the two numbers.
Yeah, he's like 18. I'm like, 18.
I
didn't see the point.
I saw the one in the eight there. I was trying to peek, too, on the phone.
$1.85 million per week.
It's good
17
week.
Weeks.
It's good yeah. Week. That's a good
before
spot.
Taxes.
See, there's a corner of the locker room where all the rich guys yeah. hang out and they look at their paychecks
yeah.
during the course of the week. And I say rich in relative terms, the generationally wealthy guys
yeah.
over there. And then there's everyone else who are making great large sums of money, but who still don't want the shame of having their check next to the checks, the likes of what Dak Prescott's going to pull in.
That's exactly right. Coming up, the NBA is not the only sport who's trying to make the bubble work, and we'll have more on that sport with one of the more interesting people in that sport. We'll get to that next. Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio, ESPN 2.
It's your home speaking, and I need you to do me a couple of favors. First, could you get that blueberry that rolled under the fridge last week? It's throwing my feng shui off. Second thing, bundle your home and car insurance with GEICO. It's easy, and we could save money. Lastly, I know you were thinking of painting the nursery back to off-white, but I'm actually feeling this baby blue. Didn't think it was my color, but I am pulling it off.
GEICO. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense. Sports Center update. The race was not run yesterday in NASCAR. There was a weather delay. It will be run today at 3 o'clock, but that certainly wasn't the story there. The story was There was a noose found in the garage of driver Bubba Wallace, the lone black driver on the circuit. NASCAR has openly denounced it and is starting an investigation. Imagine there's going to be plenty of cameras in there, as we all think, and that person will be caught. Wallace took to Twitter and said, "This will not break me. I will not give in, nor will I back down at all." In the NFL, we had just talked to Ed Werder about it. Dak Prescott signed his franchise tag tender at $31.4 million, which means when camp starts, he will be there. No one expected him to be holding out and not play the season, but still, the date of July 15th has not changed. That is the date that they can negotiate to a long-term deal. After that date, Dak can only play on the one-year deal worth only $31.4 million.
Doesn't feel like an only.
I know. I just threw it in there. On this date, June 22nd, 1994, Rockets led by Hakeem Olajuwon win their first NBA title, beating New York 90-84, game 7 of the finals. Olajuwon averaged 27-9 in the series, becoming the first player born outside the United States to win the finals MVP.
SportsCenter is brought to you by AutoZone. Need a part for your car and need it fast? AutoZone has more ways for you to get it however you want it, like free next day delivery or free same day pickup in-store or curbside. The choice is up to you. Restrictions apply. Get in the zone. AutoZone.
Golgan Wingo here with you on a Monday morning. Hope your Monday is off to a good start. So this would be a very important week for the NBA because we'll find out, what, on Wednesday, how many people
yes.
say they're – you have to know whether or not they're going to be the bubble scenario.
Have to declare, yes.
By Wednesday. And then, of course, we've seen the spike in COVID cases in Florida. Granted, it's in a different part of the state. But again, think about the virus, they spread. And if you're not really, really locking things down, they can spread to places that aren't being really hit hard with COVID cases. So that's going on for the NBA in Orlando area. Meanwhile, in Bradenton, Florida, is where the WNBA is set to begin its bubble situation as well. And for more on that, we're delighted to be joined by the legendary bad boy of the Detroit Pistons and, of course, the Las Vegas Aces president of basketball operations and head coach, and might as well say it, former Golden Domer.
Yeah.
Had to get that in here, they pummel me. Bill Laimbeer joins us. Bill, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm hanging in there today.
Yeah. So where are you on this, the whole bubble thing? We've heard, obviously, a lot of the NBA players voicing some concerns. Where are you as a coach and getting set to take your entire team down there on how this is all going to be pulled off?
Clear as mud. You know, you really don't know a lot of the details. At least we don't. I know the men are a little bit more far along and they have more money to spend, so they can communicate it better. But I think for the women, we're just taking it one day at a time. We don't really understand a lot of the details on the ground. We understand the protocols for, you know, testing and stuff like that, but the rest of the details, the back of the house, is still fairly unclear.
Have you had it? We know there have been, I think, one or two of the women who have said they weren't going to attend and weren't going to play. Anybody on your team, have they made it known that they do not want to play?
Well, you know, everybody's making a little bit of noise right now. Part of it is the uncertainty of, you know, what we're walking into. It's kind of an unknown. So you're going to get a lot of talk back and forth. I expect more than what has been announced right now. The deadline is the 25th, but that's, you know, who knows who's going to pay attention to deadlines. But I would expect some more players, and especially some of the star players who may make some outside income, probably not showing up.
Bill, to that end, you mentioned money a couple of times on here. You mentioned the NBA's got more money to spend. How have those financial discrepancies kind of manifest themselves in the way that the leagues have gone about this from your guys' standpoint as the WNBA?
Well, I give the men a lot of credit. You know, they are a big brother to the women's league. So we've been really paying attention and following their lead and understanding their protocols. Numerous meetings that are by league staff along with the men in all their meetings. So they're fully aware of what's coming at them. So I think in that regard, the bigness of the men has been a big positive for us. Now it's just the logistics of, you know, what do we have? You know, what kind of rooms do we have? You know, food, transportation, all those little back of the house things that are kind of undefined at the moment.
Bill Laimbeer with us, president of and head of basketball operations as well as a head coach for the Las Vegas Aces. Bill, we had Jeff Van Gundy on with us last week, and he thought the mental challenge of coaching in this environment would be extremely difficult to keep players motivated and bought in at all times. where are you on his opinion on that? Do you think this is going to be more challenging as a head coach because of all the variables that there and some that aren't there in terms of where you can and can't go?
Well, on the conference calls with our players over the last month and a half, you know, I've stressed the mental part. This is going to be challenging. You know, you're normally used to your friends and your family and people coming to visit you. And now you're going to be stuck with the same teammates 24 hours a day in the same environment. That's going to drive people nuts, especially when, you know, half of them are competing against each other. And some, quite frankly, don't like each other. That's reality. It's real world. But now you have to live with each other for 60 to 90 days and in a closed environment. That's going to put a stress on a lot of situations. So those teams that can rally around and just focus exclusively on basketball, which is going to be hard, then those are the ones that are going to succeed and be more competitive. You may see a team with lesser talent all rally around in great chemistry that they propel themselves to a position that they probably shouldn't be in.
Bill Laimbeer joining us here on Golic and Wingo, two-time NBA champ as a player, three-time WNBA champ as a coach. Going back to your playing days, Bill, given the scenario going on down in Orlando at Disney World, would you have gone to this? Would you have played in this bubble?
Well, you know, that's a good question. Money is still money. and, you know, even back then, comparatively speaking to the times, you know, professional athletes made a lot of money. So to turn down the paycheck is a tough swallow. But, you know, you have to do what's best for yourself and your family and your mental well-being also. I probably would have gone because I'm a competitor. But in my world, I'd say as a coach, I'm still debating, you know, is this the right thing to do? I'm going because I'm obligated to and I'm going to embrace it. But it's still a weird time and you have to overcome that mental part.
Bill Laimbeer with us here on Golic and Wingo. Bill, the other part of this that's been going on in the last few months in the world has certainly been a lot of the social unrest, the injustice that we've seen, and the response from a lot of athletes. You coach in a league that is largely made up of black women. So in the conference calls, the Zoom calls that you've had, what have the discussions been like with your players about some of the things that we've seen going on in the world?
Well, the calls we have with the players really are focused upon basketball. And about what's coming at us. I know that the league and the players are in conversations for a platform. We're very supportive. Our organization is very supportive. But most of our conversations center on basketball because this is coming at us fast and furious. And we really need to stay attuned in our calls with the players on this is what's going to happen. This is how we're going to have to do it because the clock is ticking.
Yeah, it certainly is as we're going forward. And speaking of the clock ticking, we're sort of up against it here. But I did want to ask, because I haven't had a chance to talk to you since the Last Dance documentary came out. as a former Piston bad boy, what was your take? I mean, did you watch it? And if you did, what was your assessment of it?
I did not watch it. I never would watch it. It's propaganda. That's my assessment of it. It's rehashing a story that was 30 years ago. And trying to make it. As you see, it came out. Everybody had their two cents on the negative part, too. Saying it was propaganda or it was lies or whatever, but I don't really care. Probably sold a bunch of advertising, and that's whatever everybody else's business, not mine.
Money is still money, Bill.
I gotta say, that sounds like the enforcer. I love
that's it.
It.
Yeah. Well, Bill, as always, we appreciate your time. We appreciate your insights, and we'll see what happens with the WNBA bubble system in Bradenton. Thanks for being here.
Thanks a lot, guys. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Bill. It's one thing Bill never changed.
No.
From what he did back then with the Pistons and the Bad Boys and what his opinion now was. It stayed completely the same.
Absolutely. So he dealt with those challenges back then. He's got big challenges coming up now because the Las Vegas Aces are also an extremely talented team. Like you talk about ones that might be capable of really doing things as we go forward in a lot of this, but you're facing, and that's the interesting part is we heard a while back about the agreement, the WNBA, the setup of the schedule, all those things. But as we're going through all this with the men's side right now, the union workers that they're dealing with in Disney, how they're going to take certain precautions in all these areas, Bill made it clear there, they are still very much the WNBA in the dark about how a lot of those things around transportation, around housing, about food and food and things like that are going to be taken care of.
Interesting as well. He mentioned June 25th being the WNBA's deadline to declare if you're going to the bubble, just like in the NBA, it's June 24th. But then he said, but who knows about deadlines anymore? That is interesting.
Yeah.
Is it really a deadline? I mean, is it really going to be a hard and fast deadline that you have till this time on this day And if you say you're not going, then no matter what, you can't go.
I think you're right. It's not a deadline anymore. It's a line.
Yeah.
It's a line that can be moved.
Well, you even look at like the situation. So Victor Oladipo and the Pacers, he's trying to ramp back up and see if he can play physically right now. And while the deadline to declare is Wednesday, the Pacers can very easily keep him on their roster going forward with him in his current status as he tries to figure out if he's going to be physically able to go. And if they decide he's not, remember, you can go out and then sign another player.
Right.
It would just make Victor Oladipo ineligible going forward for the season, which, hell, if you were going to say you weren't going anyway, you would be ineligible. So there are ways like that where you kind of see there's a grace period, there's wiggle room, depending on how you want to manage this situation and how much time you want to play in your roster and who you're going to bring there. Obviously, for a player like Victor Oladipo, the risk-reward of waiting for a while to decide is much greater because he's a much better player.
Yeah, so let's not call it deadline week. We'll call it line week. It's line.
It's
a movable object.
Deadline
week.
In pencil.
Yeah, it's a potentially situation where there might be something you need to do.
And lastly, on Bill Laimbeer, the one thing we always talk about, Mike, when playing is you always want to know where you stand with your coach, right?
Yeah.
Bill does seem like the guy you're going to know where you stand, good or bad, right?
Pretty sure he's not going to have any problems.
He speaks his mind. I give him that. Yeah. Absolutely right. You're going to know where you stand with him.
Yeah, there will be no vagueness. There will be no gray.
You won't walk away and say, what did he mean?
Yeah. Are you sure?
I love it.
Coming up next, are we sure? Who won the weekend?
Did you know Geico's now offering an extra 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies? That's 15% on top of what Geico could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Your goldfish to sing Bizet's Carmen? There's never been a better time to switch to Geico. Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Limitations apply. Visit geico.com for details.
The great thing about facts, they're proven. Like the fact that crude oil contains impurities. Or that base oil made from natural gas is 99.5% free of impurities. And the fact that Pennzoil is the first synthetic motor oil made from natural gas, not crude oil. It gives you unbeatable engine protection. The proof is in the Pennzoil. Based on Sequence 4A wear test using SAE 5W30.
We want it all. Table.
As the kids say, we want all the smoke.
We got all the smoke.
It's Golic and Wingo.
Golic and Wingo is presented by Progressive Insurance. This is Shower Sessions, part interview, part concert, all from the shower. Grammy winner St. Vincent invites up-and-coming artists to sing, share, and get funky all in the sound booth of the home, the shower. Watch now at youtube.com/progressive.
Have you ever sung in the shower and didn't think you sounded great?
The acoustics are phenomenal.
I mean, I always think I sound great in there.
Okay. This is what you've done to me, just so you know. This is what you've done to me. As soon as you said the acoustics in the shower are phenomenal, the first thing I thought of, but does the pee hitting the floor ruin the acoustics?
No.
I mean, that's where you've taken me as a person.
No, yeah.
That's what you've done to me.
I understand that. And if I have to be the face of a movement for making sure that peeing in the shower is normalized, even though the Levitard Show poll showed 80% of people do it, so we are the vast majority in this. But if I have to be the face of this for you, if every time you pee in the shower, you have to think of me, Trey, then so be it. Yeah. So be it. If I am in the shower peeing with you.
To be clear, I'm part of the 80%. It's just that now that's where my head went because of what you said.
And we know it's not 80%. It's more like 95%. Yeah. Now, bigger percentage, people pee in the shower or sing in the shower.
Oh, everyone sings in the shower.
Right? Even if you think you have a horrible voice, you sing in the shower.
Well, because it's also very private.
Yeah, you give it with gusto. You would go for notes in the shower that you would not go for anywhere else.
I would do it in the car.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
I would do it in the car for sure.
I love giving other people a show. I was driving yesterday and this warmed my heart so much. I saw a car full of people that were driving somewhere and they had their windows down and they were rocking out and they were looking at the car next to him, giving him a show. And I thought, way to let your hair down on that one.
Yeah.
Why hide in shame and sing like everybody is watching and curl? No, sing like you've got an audience and let them all know you're the baddest mother bleeper on the planet.
Yeah. Okay, ridiculous story from college. We drove to spring break one year. And my buddy, who's also named Trey, by the way, two of us.
Wow.
It's bizarre. Put together a Florida mixtape of all like heavy metal songs, and we'd pull up to people at stoplights
on purpose, roll down the windows, put that tape in there, and just headbang for 30 seconds as loud as we possibly could, just so people would be like, the hell is wrong with you? We would answer a lot, actually, in drive-off.
I was going to say, exactly. You know what? And there's, even though there is something wrong with you, there's nothing wrong with that in that instance.
Nope, not one. Florida Jam, baby, where you at?
Dear God. Oh, all right, that clearly didn't win the weekend. It's time to figure out who did win the weekend on this one with Golic and Wingo. And we have a lot of nominees for this one. Certainly on a very serious front, we had the ESPYs last night, and we know a lot was made of the Muhammad Ali Sports Humanitarian of the Year Award that was won by Nelson Cruz. The ESPYs is brought to you by Dove Men Plus Care, and certainly all the great work that Nelson Cruz had done, the emotional response from him in the video when he accepted the award. Pretty great moment there, so certainly a strong candidate who wins a lot more than just the weekend.
Strong candidate. I was thinking about this person, and if they'd done what they were trying to do, I would have said that was an automatic. Mike, you and I were watching it at our own respective houses yesterday.
Oh, here we go.
Let me tell you, watching Julius Maddox attempt 800 pounds in the bench press, and this is raw bench press. This is where they have to take the bar down, pause it on their chest. They don't just bounce it off their chest.
And there's no big bench shirts or anything like that. You're just in it.
Pause it until they're told to press it and then press it up. No, he has the top three lifts of all time. And he was trying to be the first man to bench 800 pounds. Now, I know we have a lot of guys listening out there. Probably a lot of you have bench pressed. Imagine this for those that didn't see it. There are people that load the weights on. His first attempt at 800 pounds, the one guy loaded the one side wrong.
Ugh.
So they actually helped lift the weight off, and he held the weight, and it started dipping to one side because one side was heavier than the other side. He had to set it back down and regroup. And you knew at that point he probably wasn't going to get it done. And unfortunately, he did miss it. But unbelievable to watch a man hold 800 pounds and control it all the way to his chest and pause there, and then he made it probably three quarters of the way up.
He fired it off with a bar speed that should not be allowed at that weight. After taking 722 pounds and stroking it off of his chest the way you or I would do 135.
So is that your winner?
He might. Who doesn't want to watch the big strong man lift stuff? We got to watch Thor Bjornsson do the deadlift competition
right.
a while ago. God bless ESPN, which, by the way, throwing my hat in the ring.
Yes.
Jimmy, Pitaro, baby, I want to be the sideline reporter the next time we do one of these. The beast of the bench press at a gym in South Bend, Indiana.
It was phenomenal. How are we not there? I want to go to these things. It was fantastic to watch a man try and bench that much. So, hell yeah, I'll give it to him anyway.
You're giving it to him?
I'll give it to him anyway.
Julius
Why Maddox, not?
The beast of the bench
press.
Oh, my. Right
he'll get 800 pounds. He will absolutely get 800 pounds. Imagine trying. You can't imagine because nobody, you can't hold it up.
Yeah,
can't. It's just crushing you.
You know what? I'll go who on the weekend? U.S. soccer on this one. Gio Reyna with the assist for Borussia Dortmund in his first Bundesliga start. And then Christian Pulisic. I started watching the EPL was back this weekend. And I know Mike Ryan on the Levitard show that comes up. Huge Chelsea fan. Does a great podcast surrounding that team. And Christian Pulisic, one of the great American players on that team.
Yeah.
Didn't start the game, but came in during the second half, I think sometime around the 51st or 52nd minute. In the next 3 minutes, they scored two goals, one of which was his, the other he was around and helped. So both of these guys, young Americans, and we're seeing them playing in overseas right now, but the young core, and that was all I heard about. Soccer Twitter was very welcoming as I dipped my toe into the EPL really for the first time, and a lot of people echoing the sentiment that if the U.S. does right in its program by some of the young talent it's got, we could have a very interesting run the next time that we are getting ready for the group to get together and actually play meaningful football.
And actually find a way to get into a World Cup?
Yeah, that'd be nice.
That would be fun.
It'd be nice, but it was fun. The EPL, I thought, was a very interesting. Again, having the crowd noise there, it felt remarkably normal watching that. So go U.S. soccer, man.
Okay, by the way, Bubba Watson's not going to win who won the weekend, but
no.
He does get the quote of the weekend.
He
was about ready to play a bunker shot at Hilton Head Island, and he noticed a crab had burrowed right under where he would have destroyed the crab. So he said, we got all types of issues in this world. We don't need crab issues. So kudos to Bubba for not, for being aware that there was something right there.
Could you imagine if he hit that ball and the crab came flying out and people would have been like, it would have been like Randy Johnson destroying the bird.
Crab might have gone farther than the ball. I mean, so we'll find out
The crab went further than the ball. This guy sucks.
I'm going with Dak Prescott. Dak Prescott won because he decides to sign minimum 31, potentially a lot more, and he knows he has all the leverage because the Cowboys can't afford that second year of the contract.
You know, when you sign your name, you're going to make at least $31 million for the year.
I'll never know. Golf was one of the first sports back in action. It all seemed well, but they had a test positive over the weekend. Are golfers going to be concerned? We'll have Tony Finau join us tomorrow. A friend of the show, Tony Finau, and a lot of other things. Stay healthy, stay safe, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow.